You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any rights yet? I do.
Just like that little critter told me down by the cold creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flat rock. Baiting that hook with only the right look. Lure in the sunshine. Ripples in the sweet tide. Baba's going out of sight. Even if it tastes all night. Ooh, ooh. I'm gonna catch me a winner. Cause I kinda like them bitter.
Good morning, fishing fans. This is Captain Debbie Hansen welcoming you to another edition of Real Talk Radio on 98.1 FM and 770 AM in Southwest Florida. You can also listen to us live from anywhere this morning at ESPNSWFL.com or by downloading the ESPN Southwest Florida app. It is producer Rick Church behind the glass this morning, and here in the studio, my special guest co-host is Matt Gentry, inshore offshore angler and manager of Sportsman's Wholesale. Sale right here in Bonita Springs. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Debbie.
It's good to have you here in the studio.
It's definitely good to be here.
I know we got to get out yesterday morning and wet a line for a little bit. It was a little chilly out there.
Yeah, I had high expectations with the cold front coming through. It kind of wasn't the bite that I had anticipated. I don't know if it got better after I left, but
not really.
Yeah, more of the same.
It was more of the same.
Yeah, no, one of those typical grind it out.
Yes. Sometimes that's just what you got to do. But it's a pleasure to have you. I know you are a wealth of knowledge. And I know that you grew up in Wilmington, North Carolina, and spent a lot of time fishing there. So I can't wait to get into our conversation this morning and talk a little bit about some of your fishing experiences up there, some of your fishing experiences growing up, get into some tackle tips and tricks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, kind of compare the two fisheries, really.
No, it's been really cool to come down here and just have another base of knowledge, because I didn't actually grow up in Wilmington. So I grew up in Camden County, North Carolina, which is going to be closer to the Outer Banks.
Okay.
So my first stomping grounds would have been...
So you were like immersed in fishing.
Yeah, Avalon Pier, you know, fishing Cape Hatteras, some of that stuff. And then I went to UNCW in Wilmington for marine biology. That's when I started to figure it out down there. And connections that I made through the tackle shop is when I really started to get offshore and really, you know, develop and get to do all these new different types of fishing that I had always wanted to do. And so it's just been a constant roll, you know, from surf fishing in the beginning all the way through going to Wilmington and then having the chance to catch wahoo and bluefin tuna and swordfish and all these other ones that, you know, you just don't think you might ever get the chance to do.
So. Yeah, you were really in an area that was prime for fishing offshore. I mean, to get out to some of those deep water canyons and do some of the fishing for species like swordfish and wahoo. I mean, things that a lot of anglers dream about doing but never really get the opportunity to do.
Right. Well, and what's funny about that is growing up close to the Outer Banks, you know, that's like the yellowfin tuna capital of the East Coast. And
yeah.
I was never able to tap into it because I didn't know the right people. So it wasn't until, you know, I moved down, spent all that time in the tackle shop, met the right people, learned how to rig all this stuff so that I could get invited on these boats to go fishing.
It's good to know people who own boats.
100%.
When you can just jump on board and learn what you need to learn or what you want to learn.
100%, yes. You know, that's your best friend in the world is somebody who will take you out fishing.
So, yeah.
Especially when you've got to go 70 miles. That's a pretty hefty gas bill on a pretty nice boat.
So. Yeah, that is definitely a hefty gas bill. And it's so interesting that you majored in marine biology. So you have that science background,
yep,
too. And I really want to learn more about what made you decide to kind of transition from that, because I'm sure you still apply a lot of that in your career now.
Yeah, 100%. And what's funny reflecting back on it is that I rarely ever doubted that I was going to do anything other than marine biology. Just my whole life, I felt like that was where I wanted to be. And I think the only time that I ever did doubt it was when I was finally out on my own and I had to pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had talked a big game as a teenager about, you know, do what you love, don't worry about the money, until it was about the money. So I remember having that, you know, second thoughts probably my junior year. And then going back, talking to my parents, and they're like, this is all you've ever wanted to do. You know, you got to stick with it.
Yeah.
But I really, truthfully, wanted to do it because I wanted to learn all of these things about the ocean that were going to make me a better fisherman. You know, obviously, I was fascinated by the science of it. But when it came down to it, the stuff that I really latched onto, the ichthyology, the, oceanography,
yeah,
upwelling, downwelling, you know, pelagic life, all that stuff that really, that I really gravitated to was just because I could translate it into some form of fishing that I hope to do in the future.
Yeah. Well, and I love having those deep conversations about all of the, I call them the fishing ingredients, or all the things that make a particular area or a fishery productive.
Right.
And I know you and I have gone out with our mutual friend Crazy Alberto Nee, yeah, quite a few times, and he thinks like that too. So it's so much fun to get out on the water with people who really get into the science of it and really think about all the reasons why the fish are where they are at any given time and why a particular fishery is exceptionally productive, and to track the migration patterns, all of that is just
absolutely
fascinating.
Yeah, I remember a time when all of that was so mysterious that I just, how could anybody possibly understand all this stuff?
Yeah.
And it takes years and years and years of gathering information to really start to put the pieces together. So
yeah, well, I cannot wait to dive into our conversation more this morning, Matt. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here. I know you're busy. So we're coming to you live from Stan and Haney Boulevard in downtown Estero, Florida this morning. And we'll be live on air until 10 a.m. If you can't stay tuned for the entire show, or you want to go back and catch up on previous episodes, you can head on over to the ESPN Real Talk podcast page. That's just at ESPNSWFL.com. The text line is open this morning, number 239-337-3776. Let us know if you've been out there on the water this past week. I know it got a little chilly out there yesterday, and even this morning it was, I think, 59 when I drove in. So text lines open, phone lines are open, and I'm actually going to head straight on over to line one because we've got Captain Barry Kuda standing by. Good morning, Barry.
Hey, good morning, and there you are in sparkling downtown Estero, Florida.
Here we are in beautiful downtown Estero, Florida. You got it. So what's going on in the world of Sir Barry Kuda this week?
Oh, my God. I have got good news. The check is on its way for my boat.
Well, I got, hallelujah.
USA financed me yesterday, yes. It's, the check is in FedEx. I may get it today or Monday. I will be down at Butter's Landing. Mark Ersling's taking good care of me there. And my Key West is on the new trailer. It's ready. All I got to do is get those papers signed, and they can get to work installing my electronics. Now I'm going to have dual Garmin and Simrad on my console, twin power poles. It's going to be just to the max. This is going to be so awesome. I am ready to go. Do I sound excited?
Well, and you should be, with good reason, because it's been a long road for you the past couple of months. So you deserve it, and I can't wait to see you back out there on the water, Barry. So that's super exciting.
I'll have pictures and everything. I'll have reports. Oh, just imagine. So, yeah, I'm excited about it. It's good. And meanwhile, I got out in the kayak a couple times, and I don't know about today. It doesn't seem like such a pleasant day to be knocking around in a kayak. We'll see how it shapes up later, but I'll probably be out tomorrow. I'll be able to say something next week.
Yeah, so did you get out in the kayak this past week? You did for a few hours or no?
Yeah, last weekend I did well. I caught a bunch of fish. The water's nice and clear.
Yes, I have heard those reports from Estero Bay. That's great
news.
What's
the scoop on the water quality in Estero? Somebody told me a rumor that it's horrible and you should stay away from the water, and that doesn't match my perception at all.
Those aren't the reports that I've been receiving from the captains and guides. A lot of people have said the water clarity is really good and things are really cleaning up nicely, so...
That's what I thought.
But we'll check in because I'm sure that we'll have Greg, and I know Alex is up in North Carolina this weekend, but Alex will be here in the studio.
He's having fun without us, guys.
he's a little even chillier than we are up there. I think he sent me a text this morning, and it was like 22 degrees where he's at.
That's
yes, he is.
The fire pit and a warm blanket.
Yes. Yeah, that's the perfect weather for a fireplace or a fire pit and a fleece blanket for sure. So
chocolate weather. You know what I want is a mug that keeps it warm for me.
I'm sure they have those.
There's about 100.
I'm sure they have those.
I had two for the boat. An electric mug, you plug it into a plug on your console.
Yeah.
And you set the temperature in the handle. Those were really cool, but the hurricane got them. I got to get new ones.
Well, it just gives you an excuse to do a little more shopping, right?
I guess
boat
so.
Shopping. Some new dishes.
Got to re-outfit.
There you go.
Yeah. So what was the target species this week, Barry? You said you caught a few fish, but you
What did you catch from the kayak? Inquiring minds like Matt want to know.
The snook and ladyfish were quite active. You caught a couple of big ladyfish. The snook were on the small side.
Yeah.
I think the biggest was about 15 inches, but just a lot of fun. And one thing I like about small snook is they're way more athletic, way more acrobatic than the big ones. You catch that big mama, she can get her head out of the water and shake it, but she can't get it all out of the water. She can't go airborne for you. She'd like to, but it's just not there anymore.
Yeah, that's how you know it's a good one, when she can't get out of the water.
Yeah, that's so true.
No, they get old like us. They say, no, I'm not going all the way up there just to show off for you.
Well, Barry, congratulations on the new boat. Please post pictures and keep us updated here. We'll look forward to catching up with you next week. We've got Nick standing by online, too, so I'm going to grab his call. But it was great to hear from you this morning, and congrats again. We'll catch up with you next Saturday.
Thank you. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye, Barry. That is Captain Barry Kuda calling in, and we're going to head over to line two. We've got Nick Davis standing by with 239 Flies. Hey, Nick, good morning.
Chad and Debbie, top of the morning to you.
What is going on, my friend?
Not too much. Just sitting here scrolling through Facebook, jealous of our friend Alex, who is, I'm sure, already sitting in a hot tub watching it snow in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. You know he's doing that. He's been texting me sunrise pictures from the mountains, pictures of that beautiful log cabin that he's staying in up there.
Yeah, that North Carolina, they pretty nice up there, let me tell you.
Yeah, you might know a little bit about that.
Really doing some stuff up there in NC, but yeah, nice little week here this week here in the 239. We had our fly tying night fly tying night on Wednesday, and we had our casting clinic on Saturday, and all went off without a hitch. Great turnouts at both.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, it's been an active week. We had a couple of guides run a couple of trips this week. Baby tarpon and snook are still kind of active with this cold front that we got, but yeah, it's coming along all right.
Yeah, and Nick, have you heard any reports? Barry was just saying something about the water quality and that he had heard some people say that it wasn't very good, but I've heard the opposite from Estero Bay, just that things are cleaning up really nicely and the water clarity is actually very good.
Yeah, I think we're kind of splitting hairs from what I understood. It got a little churned up with the cold front that just moved through and the wind, which is going to happen just about every time we get a cold front.
Yeah.
It's going to come through with all the wind and all the waves, and it's going to get stirred up, and then it's going to settle, and then you're going to be left with, you know, really nice sight fishing water, or if you can find pockets of clean water, you know, just, but it's not toxic or bad. It's just, you know, stirred up from being shook.
Yes, just like pretty much always happens this time of year when we get those north winds that come blowing through. So
yep, that's exactly it. When we get that north wind, it gets pretty nasty. And it gets nasty down south too on a south wind, which it seems like you get a couple of days after each cold front. So, just something you deal with this time of year is just
wind,
you know.
It's just part of it, and that's why you need to go to 239 Flies when they've got a casting clinic with Joe Mahler.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right. Water quality is fantastic. Water clarity is hit or miss.
Not so much. Yeah.
But. Yeah, no, we had a great time. Joe put on a phenomenal clinic last Saturday. I want to say we probably had about 20, 25 at one point show up, and you know what Joe does. He stands out there and just delivers the news with delivers the news with just absolute pinpoint accuracy.
And, yeah, so the focus was on eight weights, right? last Saturday?
Yeah, a little bit lighter, you know, just your all-around stuff. We're coming up on beach season here. If we get a couple of warm days or a couple of warm weeks in a row, we'll be right in the thick of beach season. So
yeah,
we hit the lighter stuff. I'm sure the next one we do probably in April, we're going to focus on 12 weights and 11 weights and chucking big rods for big fish that tend to come migrating through our area every spring.
Yes.
Which I'm very much looking forward to.
But we are all looking forward to those warmer days and just the awesome fishing conditions that follow along with that. But yeah. So, Nick, kind of jumping back to the water being more churned up, do you have any recommendations for fly patterns, colors, in those specific conditions?
Yeah, when it gets churned up, I really like black and purples and darker colors. It's kind of one of those things you gotta think. If you can see it, you know, there's a good chance the fish can see it too.
Yep.
If you can't see it, there's a good chance they're not going to see it. You know, fish are still going to see, fish are still going to use their lateral line. That's more than that line that runs down the side of them. That's more than just, a pretty accent.
It's more than just pinstriping.
Yeah, it's more than just cool graphics that add horsepower. No. They use that to feel. So, sometimes when the water is a little bit churned up and a little muddier, we'll switch to a bigger pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Just pushes a little bit more water, creates a bigger, disturbance in the water, if you will, and they can just feel it and find it a little better. So, yeah, that's the piece of advice for today. A little bit bigger, a little bit darker, and just work it a little bit slower.
Yeah, and do you ever switch over to using intermediate lines when the wind picks up just to try to get the fly, especially if you're fishing maybe some of those deeper holes and drop-offs?
I think it's kind of the ticket for me. Like, when there's, if the water's a little bit deeper, I almost always fish intermediate lines exclusively on, like, canal tarpon or canal peacocks or canal largemouth.
Yeah.
I've got an 8-weight that I've got strung up with intermediate line on it, and I don't have an 8-weight that I, with a spare spool and that I, swap stuff out. No. You got a whole rod dedicated to that, because when you need it, you're not taking that thing apart and putting it together. But,
yeah.
But yeah, the deeper water, 5 feet to 10 feet, that's when the water's deep like that, you almost need to have an intermediate to have a chance at catching fish. But if you do, there's a good chance you're going to catch some fish.
Yeah, because I remember when we had Pete Squibb with the Sanibel Fly Fishers in the studio last year, and he was talking about targeting snook from the beach. He was saying a lot of times when you've got that, those windier conditions and you need to get that fly down into that trough off the beach, those
yep.
bigger fish are sitting down a little deeper in that trough. So if you can get your fly down just a little bit deeper, it really pays off in a lot of ways. So
not only that, the intermediate line of castings went great because they're a little bit thinner, they're a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
So they go through the wind a little bit better. And then, yeah, when you're on the beach and you've got those waves, the float or the sinking line, the intermediate line, will get below the wave. So you can keep it taut as it's going through the water, and you can feel it when they pick it up. So that's almost the only scenario that exists other than the, the deeper canal tarpon is the beach scenario. And, intermediate lines can be really, really useful when you need them.
Yeah. So, and you might know some place where people can find those.
Yeah. If you want to swing by 239 Flies, I want to say we've got at least 27 of them in stock, especially this time of year.
Yeah. So, and you're using you recommend just like a tropical... Is there any particular type of all around like inshore line that you recommend?
It could have a couple of setups. It's one of those things where if you want to get into fly fishing, you can get it done with an 8-weight and a floating line. Most of the time you're gonna use a floating line in fly fishing.
Yeah.
In saltwater fly fishing. Manufacturers all make one. It's about finding one that works for you, but we can certainly help you with that. If you're into it and you're going to do it, yeah, you know, like having a 6-weight, having a 7-weight, and having a dedicated intermediate setup to where you don't have to pop stuff out, you know, take stuff apart, put stuff back together, you know, in the field, because it gets time consuming. And I assure you, if it's a pain in the butt to do in your garage, it's 3 times as big of a pain in the butt to do it on the boat.
Yeah, you don't want to do it on the water.
Kayak. Like, you're not doing it on the water.
Preparation is key.
Yes, it sounds great in theory, but let me tell you how many times you're going to do that. You can do that. You can count the times on no hand. we absolutely have all of that in stock. It's been actually a good week. The supply chains are really starting to kick back on to some normalcy, which is great.
Good deal. Good to hear that. And what's coming up at the shop? We got about 1 minute, and then we got a head to break. So
perfect.
Let us know what's coming up.
We actually got a couple of things coming up at both shops. We've got a fly tie night at 828. Alex, if you're still up there and listening, we've got a fly tie night at 828 on Wednesday the 15th. And then at 239 here in Bonita Beach, we've got one coming up on Thursday, I believe it's the 25th. I'll have to double-check the date, but it's the last Thursday of the month in February. No fly casting clinics this month. We're going to give Joe the month off. We try to do those quarterly. Had a big week as far as UPS and FedEx go. They came by and dropped a bunch of stuff off, so we're pretty stocked up. So if you need something, come by and see us.
Good deal. All right, Nick. Well, thanks for checking in this morning. Great to hear from you as always, and we will catch up with you next Saturday.
Look forward to it. I'll give you a shout then. Have a good week.
Look forward to it. Take care. Bye, Nick.
Bye.
That is Nick Davis calling in with 239 Flies, and we're going to head off to our first break of the morning. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Stay tuned.
Got up at dawn just to be out on the water. The weatherman said hot and getting hotter, but he didn't say nothing about it. Raining like hell. Oh, well. A bad day of fishing beats a good day of anything else.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Matt Gentry, inshore offshore angler and manager of Sportsman's Wholesale here in Bonita Springs. And we are going to be talking about some inshore fishing, offshore fishing. We're going to cover some tackle tips and tricks. We're going to cover a little bit about Matt's marine biology background, some of his experiences deep dropping for swordfish. So we got a lot to cover here this morning. And in addition to my conversation with Matt, we'll be talking with Dave Westra at 8 a.m. We're going to be talking with Captain Steve Johnson at 9 a.m. He'll have the tournament and event rundown. And of course, we've got useless information coming up at 9:15. So stay tuned. And then coming up in the next few weeks on Real Talk, Captain Alex Dolinsky is going to be back in the studio on Saturday, February 4th. And then we've got inshore captains Brian Stroney and Captain Mark Yemen in the studio on Saturday, February 11th. So definitely looking forward to those two shows coming up. So Matt, let's talk a little bit about how you got started fishing. Like, where did this addiction initiate? How did it start? Like, who got you hooked on the sport when you were a kid?
So for as long as I can remember, it has been the most important thing. I must have drove my parents crazy back in the day. But I started to tell you the story yesterday about the first time that I was ever handed a fishing pole.
Yeah.
And I called to confirm the details. So
And you were 9 months old.
It would have been 8 months. So I was born in April, first Christmas, 8 months old.
Oh, my gosh.
It was my brother's Christmas present. It was a Snoopy fishing pole.
Yeah.
And apparently my dad hands it to me, and I just lit up, you know, wide eyes, shaking, you know, just as excited as could be. And so as I thought about this and how I was going to tell this story, because I know it would be natural to say that that's pretty far-fetched, like maybe it's just a kid that was excited about a toy. But I think that you could take most fishermen into the tackle shop today, and you could hand them a perfectly balanced outfit, and you're going to get a similar reaction out of them. So,
I think that's true.
I don't think it's that far-fetched. So you said nature versus nurture. That one was definitely nature. You know, it's always been something that I've gravitated towards. I've always wanted to learn more about it. You know, obviously idolized all the different Saturday morning TV show hosts over the years. But I told you I was going to tell that one. And then the Rhinelander Boom Lake ice fishing story.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think just kind of hits home just how bad it was that I needed to fish regardless of the conditions. So it would have been, again, Christmas time in northern Wisconsin, and I was determined that I needed to catch a fish. You know, couldn't just go sledding like a normal kid. So we borrowed a hand auger, borrowed a little ice scoop, went out and got an ice fishing rod and a couple little spoons, and everybody had to chip in to help me dig this hole in the ice.
So and you were how old at this point?
11 is what my mom
You were
guessed.
11, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I called her to get the chronological details. I didn't want to come on here and lie. So, but yeah, so I wasn't as young as I thought I was in that one. But I sat there on a 5-gallon bucket and jigged that spoon until I finally caught a little yellow perch. And, you know, then it was a successful trip and I could go about my day.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you were fishing in Rhinelander, Wisconsin in the middle of winter, it was crazy cold.
It's brutal.
Crazy cold.
I mean, what, you know, who would think, who would see that, see a frozen lake? And this wasn't the dressed up ice fishing where you have a shack and a TV.
No, you weren't in a shanty or anything like that.
This
you didn't have
school.
One of those little shelters. You were like on a bucket on the ice.
Yeah.
Digging a hole with a hand auger.
And it makes no sense because I don't know if today if I would have that same determination to go try to catch that fish that 11-year-old me had.
That's awesome. That's such a great story. And I love that because that area, that Rhinelander, Wisconsin area. So when I started fishing with my grandfather when I was 5, knee-high to a grasshopper, it was in Iron River, Michigan, which is basically Rhinelander was on our way up to Iron River, Michigan. We would stop at the McDonald's in Rhinelander. Yeah. So apparently lots of good early fishing memories made in Wisconsin and in Michigan, because that was my first fish ever, too, was a yellow perch.
And you said on the Snoopy pole.
On a Snoopy pole.
Yes.
In fact, I don't still have my Snoopy pole, but my mom, when my grandfather passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, my mom sent me my tackle box. I had a little plastic tackle box.
Wow.
My first tackle box. She just mailed that to me. Down here in Florida, my grandfather had hung on to it all these years, so it was like a time capsule.
Yeah,
it was just the neatest experience to open that up, and definitely a few tears there. Just...
Oh yeah, well, I've kind of had the same thing. You know, my tackle that stayed up in Rhinelander in the basement at Grandma's house for all those years.
Yeah,
and you know, every year I'd go back and would add on to it, and it would just. There wasn't too much wintertime fishing that went on after that. You know, that's my one success story for wintertime northern Wisconsin fishing. The rest would have been bass and brim and trying to catch a muskie from shore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Muskie and walleye. Everybody's got the muskie and the walleye stories, too.
Yes. Yeah, don't say walleye too many times.
No, we can't. We hear enough about walleye down here in Florida, and we don't talk about walleye down here. So, but anyways, the point being that it's so interesting to me to hear stories because, you know, you've got some anglers that pick up fishing later in life. Then you've got some who it's almost like it's in their DNA, like you and your story.
Right.
It's almost like you just grew up with having that passion and that love for fishing and for the outdoors, which is just, I mean, so cool. So then fast forward to you move to the Wilmington area.
Yep.
And then you're fishing. Did you do much inshore fishing in Wilmington?
So I did.
For redfish, sea trout, flounder.
100%. Yep. So it started out as, and what's cool about that is that's all stuff I wanted to learn. And in time, it was really meeting the right people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that North Carolina speckled trout fishermen is a very secretive group. So that one takes some time to break into. They'll lie to you more than anybody else in the world. But yeah, so had the opportunity. It started out fishing from shore. And again, you know, meeting people through the tackle shop. One that I'll never forget is I was catching trout in Mason's Inlet at the north end of Wrightsville Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And David Chalmers is, you know, a well-known trout fisherman up there, regular at the shop. Finally, one day, he's like, you should come fishing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, man, he's going to take me to all the secret trout. You know, I was young, naive, yeah. 18, 19. I thought he's going to take me to all the secret spots. And we get on the boat in the creek, and he runs me right to that same mud bank where I told him I was catching fish from shore, and drops the anchor. And that was my lesson that, like, you know, just because somebody's going to take you fishing, and maybe I shouldn't talk about where I'm fishing to these people.
Right, right.
But just because somebody says they're going to take you fishing doesn't mean they're going to show you everything. You know, you still got to pay your dues and earn your way.
Yeah, do your homework and, yeah, earn your fish,
yeah,
really, because 100%. You're not learning anything. We always talk about that on the show. It's like why people get so focused on spots when you're not – that's not helping you. If somebody gives you a spot, you're not learning anything that you're going to be able to take into your fishing experience moving forward. The important part is paying attention to why the fish are in an area at any given time. That's going to help you replicate that success.
And exactly. So like maybe somebody does give you a spot or they take you fishing somewhere.
Right.
Rather than go back to their spot, maybe look at the conditions that made that a good spot.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Was it the current? Was it the depth? Was it the oysters that were there?
The water temperature in that area for whatever reason.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And that's something that I've always tried to do. You know, another one that was kind of hard to crack into would be like the Cape Fear flounder fishery.
Yeah.
So that was a really cool one. And it became a little tougher to do over the last few years because they implemented seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became like a rodeo. You know, everybody had a month and a half and then a month to go catch all these flounder. So places where you didn't normally see a lot of people,
it turned into
all
absolute
of a sudden
mayhem.
Were super crowded.
Yeah. Yep.
But there was two really good flounder fisheries up there, one being the Cape Fear River, the other being the Nearshore Wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was another one. Got to knock that off the list.
So what's the biggest flounder you caught up there?
I have netted some big flounder.
Yeah.
For friends on the boat. My biggest is probably about 6 pounds, but this last year I flew up one day during the season, just coincidentally, I think when they were opening the Wilmington store, and went with my buddy Bill, and he caught one off of a dock that we didn't weigh, but I think it was 28 and a half inches and probably would have been about 9 pounds.
Wow, and awesome.
It's pretty, you know, when you put a fish that size in the boat and it literally looks like a doormat.
Yep.
And then you keep the net over top of it the entire time, you know, because they will, and we were in, you know, my old boat, which doesn't have very high sides. A fish that size will flop right back over the side, and then you've really got a heartbreaker.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, man. Well, and you know what? It's so cool to hear you talk about some of these stories because, really, fishing, it's amazing how it is a great connector of people. No matter what's going on in the world, no matter how divided people seem on different issues that are out there, you can go into a tackle shop, you can walk into a grocery store and be wearing a fishing shirt, and no matter what, everything else falls to the wayside and two people build a connection and nothing else matters.
100%. And I think that's why I've stuck with it so long. You know, it's hard to walk away from working in a tackle store, being in that environment, you know, talking to like-minded people.
Yeah.
Because once you get used to it, the thought of just having a normal job where you don't make those connections, don't see those people, don't get to talk about all this stuff,
yeah,
it's hard to even imagine, you know, just having a desk job.
Yeah, so talk a little bit. We got about 2 minutes left here before we need to head off to break. But talk a little bit about your marine biology studies, because you went to University of North Carolina at Wilmington,
yes,
correct?
Correct.
And you studied marine biology.
I did.
But then what kind of made you decide, okay, I don't really want to be out there working in the field. I'd rather be working with people, helping them be successful at catching fish.
Sure. So it was kind of the way the timing worked out of the whole thing. So that was a college job for me.
Mm-hmm.
Started that, would have been my sophomore year of college. And so it was part-time, getting closer to full-time. The year that I graduated. And I graduated in 2016, and coincidentally, the manager at the time of the store moved on to another job that same year. So the position to move up in the store came open the same time I graduated. And so looking at it financially, it was pretty much the same either way. And I knew that I really enjoyed what I was doing. Felt like I could stick with it. You know, maybe make a career out of it, maybe not. I wasn't thinking that far ahead. I just knew that I liked doing that. And the field work for marine biology, it wasn't as glorious as what you think it is.
You know,
it could be just lab work. You might just be taking samples. So I wasn't that confident that I could really get into something that I wanted to do and would enjoy on the science side of it. And I knew that I could always go back to it. I mean, I threatened to go back and get a master's degree and go that route, but
you're still applying your education every day.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I mean, I used to joke that I had a bachelor's degree in marine biology, but then a master's degree from the tackle shop.
Yeah.
I've learned so much more there.
Yeah, definitely. And just all the people that you get to meet and all the stories you get to hear, and helping people has to be really rewarding.
It's rewarding.
Rewarding. All right, we're going to head off to another break. More with Matt when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Bet you think I'm sitting at home, no. Bet you think that I'm all alone, no. Bet you think I'm missing you and wishing you would call my phone, hell no.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, online at ESPNSWFL.com. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host Matt Gentry of Sportsman's Wholesale. Getting ready to roll into the 8 a.m. hour of Real Talk Radio. Phone lines are open. Go ahead, give us a call, 239-337-ESPN. Send us a text at that same number, 239-337-3776. And we are actually going to head straight on over to line one because we've got Captain Jim Fortman standing by. So I'm going to grab his call, get his report from down in the 10,000 islands. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good morning.
What is going on? How are things down in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's a little windy.
Yeah.
A little bit more wind. So
yeah, you're going to have that from time to time.
Conditions this week have been, I'd say, challenging. we had one good day, but the fish just, I tell you, it was a tough fight this week. So
yeah, with that front rolling through.
Yeah, we had two fronts that came through this week, one on Monday and another one on yesterday. So the fish decided to finally eat yesterday, so the water temperature didn't really drop a whole lot this week, but it did fluctuate a whole lot. beginning of the week it was upper 60s, middle of the week it was about 75, and then yesterday it dropped back down to 67. So,
yeah, that's a little chilly for our Florida fish.
Well, I can say I even talked to another captain yesterday that was checking out the creeks, and they just turned on yesterday. I mean, it was like magical. The conditions were you had to get out of the wind.
Yeah. Well, we had overcast skies yesterday morning, too, which always seems to help as well.
Yeah, yeah, that did help a lot. What didn't help was the 25-knot sustained winds. That did not help.
No?
So it was a week of wind knots and close that bail quick.
Yes.
Put your rod tip down.
Yeah, so tell us, give us the scoop on redfish and sea trout and what else is going on in your area, Jim? Still pretty good sheep's head bite?
Yeah, the sheep head bite turned out really good yesterday. I actually took a personal day, helped a buddy of mine celebrate his birthday, and we hit a couple of sheep head spots and went home with a nice little bag of fillets. They were chewing, you know, just typical bait stealers, you know, nipping at the stuff. Now, the sea trout turned on, but the areas where they were in, it was tough fishing because they were hanging out. They're hanging out in deep areas. So wherever, you know, there was a cut in our area, the sheephead and the sea trout would be in those areas. So getting the bait down to where it needed to be, that was a challenge. But when he did get it down there, They were feisty and ready to feed.
Well, when you say deep areas, Jim, give us a rough idea. Like, what depth are you talking about? Like,
we're
5 to 8 feet?
8 to 12 foot holes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of holes in our area around the passes. Unfortunately, like I said, they're in exposed areas. But if you could get the baits down to where they needed to be, the sea trout would be in that area. Now, the redfish, they're pushed way back in the creek still. They are literally not wanting to participate at all. other than the one yesterday, we saw one. Unfortunately, my buddy pulled the hook. He learned why not to eat plantains on the boat. Yeah, he had a tough day yesterday, but he loved them plantains.
You mean plantains? Plantains?
Yeah, plantains.
Too close to a banana, is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Pretty much. So,
Matt, I will just pretend you did not say that word.
Okay, gotcha.
We will
I
just
forgot
pretend.
That was a taboo to even say it.
Oh, my gosh. You're funny, Jim. You're funny.
Plantains.
You're funny. Plantains. Yeah.
Yeah, we actually saw a very nice redfish. It was coming to the boat, and the hook just kind of came out and flew by our heads, and we were like, "Wow!"
So was he bass fishing? Was he bass fishing? He did the Bassmaster hook set on a redfish. Is that what happened?
No. Actually, it was more of a tug and war, and the fish won. So,
he
pulled that hook right out of its mouth. It was a good size. It was probably the biggest redfish I've seen in probably last month, which not really saying too much. It was probably pushing around 27 inches to 29 inches.
Okay.
It was a nice fish. But, you know, it was one we haven't seen them. You know, everybody's been having to struggle with them. And like I said, yesterday, everybody went into feed. We even got a 28-inch snook yesterday, which is in 66-degree water. You wouldn't expect. You know, but everything was feeding, including the tarpon back in the creeks. So they were, you know, that's been the trick. Now, if you got a micro skiff, the creeks are literally, we had a negative low tide yesterday.
Yeah.
So, and when I say negative low, I mean, like, we had to take our time going through the channel because the channel was about, there were some couple parts that it was right at about 2 feet of water. So, you know, It was a challenge with this wind. Whenever we had a northeast wind and now going tide, you can just count on about a loss of about a foot and a half on a normal low tide.
Yeah, so. And that's something that's important for people who are just, you know, who have recently moved down and who are looking at a tide chart and thinking, okay, well, you know, this is how much water is going to be moving. Nope, when you've got those winds, especially when they're above 20 miles an hour, you can count on the fact that those tides are going to vary considerably from what you're looking at on that tide chart.
Yeah, and yesterday with the wind, we actually, the best bite that we had was when the tide was switching, because it wasn't allowing the incoming tide to come in. Mm-hmm. So the tide was actually just really cranking at one point, and then just kind of slowed to enough that you could get a better presentation. And that's when the fish really just started really just coming over the rails really quick. So it was a nice little bite. Now, we do have different conditions this week, springtime conditions, if anybody didn't see the forecast.
Yes, it looks like it's
laid down.
It'll be back up in the 80s. That's great news.
Yep, it's the roller coaster we call winter down here. So
here one day and gone the next.
Yes.
Yeah. I did hear there was a couple pompano sightings that on the outside this week before the winds picked up, obviously. But I had a buddy of mine that said, man, we got into them. They were hanging out. They're hanging out on the grass and sand flats on the outside. Pretty much from, he said he was seeing them basically from Coon Key all the way down to Pavilion. They weren't in great numbers, but they were coming back in. So that's a nice little sign. It's another sign of spring. The crab hatch is in full swing, by the way, if you're in our area. Watch out for the crab pots. They literally doubled down on them in our area, and they're pretty much popping up everywhere. So,
gotcha.
Other than that, one little key boaters note. If you are going to use the Port of the Islands Marina, please respect the speed limit there. We had 3 manatee strikes this week.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and there's nothing like 16 FWC officers in our canal coming in yesterday to make a full-on statement of it. So
yeah.
I got a feeling, they're going to be, they were doing recovery yesterday. So if anybody was wondering what was going on there. But other than that, area's been really good. The water's really healthy. We're seeing a lot of grass, so that's really nice because the grass is starting to really come back in our area.
Yeah, that's encouraging. That's great to hear.
Yeah, no, the water quality's been really good. Until the last 3 days, and it's kind of due to be expected when we get these high winds and these strong tides, the mud kind of gets stirred up. So I'm going to say probably about Monday, if the winds, which they keep telling us that the wind's going to kind of get knocked down eventually, the water's going to start coming back to that nice clear like we had before. So, and which is going to really encourage fishing. And I'm really hoping that the winds are going to knock down. I got a couple of experienced anglers coming out this week that were really looking forward to doing some topwater trout fishing.
Well, that's always fun. So go get them, Jim. And we got to head off to a break, but thanks for checking in. Thanks for the report. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next Saturday, Jim.
I'm coming away next week, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye. That is Captain Jim Fortman calling in from down in the 10,000 Islands. He's at backwaterfishingnaples.net. And we're going to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back.
I heard Davy Crockett had a pint in his pocket, good whiskey at the Alamo. Now I bet Pancho Villa had a jug of tequila when he walked the streets of old Mexico.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.